He sauntered across the road, swaying his head from side to side. His bulk, his easy pace, and the solid sound of his boots had something of the conqueror in them. He approached the young woman and, without saluting, began at once to converse with her. She swung her sunshade more quickly and executed half-turns on her heels. Once or twice when he spoke to her at close quarters, she laughed and bent her head. Lenehan observed them for a few minutes. Then he walked rapidly along beside the chains to some distance and crossed the road obliquely. As he approached Hume Street corner, he found the air heavily scented, and his eyes made a swift, anxious scrutiny of the young woman's appearance. She had her Sunday finery on. Her blue serge skirt was held at the waist by a belt of black leather. The great silver buckle of her belt seemed to depress the center of her body, catching the light stuff of her white blouse like a clip. She wore a short black jacket with mother-of-pearl buttons and a ragged black boa. The ends of her tulle collarette had been carefully disordered, and a big bunch of red flowers was pinned in her bosom, stems upwards. Lenehan's eyes noted approvingly her stout, short, muscular body. Frank, rude health glowed in her face, on her fat red cheeks, and in her unabashed blue eyes. Her features were blunt. She had broad nostrils, a straggling mouth, which lay open in a contented leer, and two projecting front teeth. As he passed, Lenehan took off his cap, and after about 10 seconds, Corley returned the salute to the air. This he did by raising his hand vaguely and pensively changing the angle of position of his hat. Lenehan walked as far as the Shelbourne Hotel, where he halted and waited. After waiting for a little time, he saw them coming towards him, and when they turned to the right, he followed them, stepping lightly in his white shoes down one side of Merrion Square. As he walked on slowly, timing his pace to theirs, he watched Corley's head, which turned at every moment towards the young woman's face, like a big ball revolving on a pivot. He kept the pair in view until he had seen them climbing the stairs of the Donnybrook tram. Then he turned about and went back the way he had come. Now that he was alone, his face looked older. His gaiety seemed to forsake him, and as he came by the railings of the Duke's lawn, he allowed his hand to run along them. The air which the harpers had played began to control his movements. His softly padded feet played the melody, while his fingers swept a scale of variations idly along the railings after each group of notes. He walked listlessly round Stephen's Green and then down Grafton Street. Though his eyes took note of many elements of the crowd through which he passed, they did so morosely. He found trivial all that was meant to charm him, and did not answer the glances which invited him to be bold. He knew that he would have to speak a great deal, to invent and to amuse, and his brain and throat were too dry for such a task. The problem of how he could pass the hours till he met Corley again troubled him a little. He could think of no way of passing them but to keep on walking. He turned to the left when he came to the corner of Rutland Square and felt more at ease in the dark, quiet street, the sombre look of which suited his mood. He paused at last before the window of a poor-looking shop over which the words "Refreshment Bar" were printed in white letters. On the glass of the window were two flying inscriptions, "Ginger Beer" and "Ginger Ale." A cut ham was exposed on a great blue dish, while near it on a plate lay a segment of very light plum pudding. He eyed this food earnestly for some time, and then, after glancing warily up and down the street, went into the shop quickly. He was hungry, for except some biscuits, which he had asked two grudging curates to bring him, he had eaten nothing since breakfast time. He sat down at an uncovered wooden table opposite two work girls and a mechanic. A slatternly girl waited on him. "How much is a plate of peas?" he asked.
3 halfpence, sir," said the girl.
"Bring me a plate of peas," he said, and a bottle of ginger beer. He spoke roughly in order to belie his air of gentility, for his entry had been followed by a pause of talk. His face was heated. To appear natural, he pushed his cap back on his head and planted his elbows on the table. The mechanic and the two work girls examined him point by point before resuming their conversation in a subdued voice. The girl brought him a plate of hot grocer's peas seasoned with pepper and vinegar, a fork, and his ginger beer. He ate his food greedily and found it so good that he made a note of the shop mentally. When he had eaten all the peas, he sipped his ginger beer and sat for some time thinking of Corley's adventure. In his imagination, he beheld the pair of lovers walking along some dark road. He heard Corley's voice in deep, energetic gallantries, and saw again the leer of the young woman's mouth. This vision made him feel keenly his own poverty of purse and spirit. He was tired of knocking about, of pulling the devil by the tail, of shifts and intrigues. He would be 31 in November. Would he never get a good job? Would he never have a home of his own? He thought how pleasant it would be to have a warm fire to sit by and a good dinner to sit down to. He had walked the streets long enough with friends and with girls. He knew what those friends were worth. He knew the girls, too. Experience had embittered his heart against the world, but all hope had not left him. He felt better after having eaten than he had felt before, less weary of his life, less vanquished in spirit. He might yet be able to settle down in some snug corner and live happily if he could only come across some good, simple-minded girl with a little of the ready. He paid tuppence halfpenny to the slatternry girl and went out of the shop to begin his wandering again. He went into Capel Street and walked along towards the City Hall. Then he turned into Dame Street. At the corner of George's Street, he met two friends of his and stopped to converse with them. He was glad that he could rest from all his walking. His friends asked him, had he seen Corley, and what was the latest? He replied that he had spent the day with Corley. His friends talked very little. They looked vacantly after some figures in the crowd, and sometimes made a critical remark. One said that he had seen Mac an hour before in Westmoreland Street. At this, Lenehan said that he had been with Mac the night before in Egan's. The young man who'd seen Mac in Westmoreland Street asked, was it true that Mac had won a bit over a billiard match? Lenehan did not know. He said that Holohan had stood them drinks in Egan's. He left his friends at 9:45 and went up George's Street. He turned to the left of the City Markets and walked on into Grafton Street. The crowd of girls and young men had thinned, and on his way up the street he heard many groups and couples bidding one another good night. He went as far as the clock of the College of Surgeons. It was on the stroke of 10. He set off briskly along the northern side of the green, hurrying for fear Corley should return too soon. When he reached the corner of Merrion Street, he took his stand in the shadow of a lamp and brought out one of the cigarettes which he had reserved and lit it. He leaned against the lamppost and kept his gaze fixed on the part from which he expected to see Corley and the young woman return. His mind became active again. He wondered had Corley managed it successfully. He wondered if he had asked her yet, or if he would leave it to the last. He suffered all the pangs and thrills of his friend's situation as well as those of his own. But the memory of Corley's slowly revolving head calmed him somewhat. He was sure Corley would pull it off all right. All at once the idea struck him that perhaps Corley had seen her home by another way and given him the slip. His eyes searched the street. There was no sign of them. Yet it was surely half an hour since he had seen the clock of the College of Surgeons. Would Corley do a thing like that? He lit his last cigarette and began to smoke it nervously. He strained his eyes as each tram stopped at the far corner of the square. They must have gone home by another way. The paper of his cigarette broke and he flung it into the road with a curse. Suddenly, he saw them coming towards him. He started with delight and, keeping close to his lamppost, tried to read the result in their walk. They were walking quickly, the young woman taking quick short steps while Corley kept beside her with his long stride. They did not seem to be speaking. An intimation of the result pricked him like the point of a sharp instrument. He knew Corley would fail. He knew it was no go. They turned down Baggot Street and he followed them at once, taking the other footpath. When they stopped, he stopped too. They talked for a few moments, and then the young woman went down the steps into the area of a house. Corley remained standing at the edge of the path, a little distance from the front steps. Some minutes passed. Then the hall door was opened slowly and cautiously. A woman came running down the front steps and coughed. Corley turned and went towards her. His broad figure hid hers from view for a few seconds, and then she reappeared running up the steps. The door closed on her, and Corley began to walk swiftly towards Stephen's Green. Lenehan hurried on in the same direction. Some drops of light rain fell. He took them as a warning, and glancing back towards the house, which the young woman had entered to see that he was not observed, he ran eagerly across the road. Anxiety and his swift run made him pant. He called out, "Hello, Corley!" Corley turned his head to see who had called him, and then continued walking as before. Lenehan ran after him, settling the waterproof on his shoulders with one hand. "Hello, Corley!" he cried again. He came level with his friend and looked keenly in his face. He could see nothing there. "Well," he said, "did it come off?" They had reached the corner of Ely Place. Still without answering, Corley swerved to the left and went up the side street. His features were composed in stern calm. Lenehan kept up with his friend, breathing uneasily. He was baffled, and a note of menace pierced through his voice. "Can't you tell us?" he said. "Did you try her?" Corley halted at the first lamp and stared grimly before him. Then, with a grave gesture, he extended a hand towards the light and, smiling, opened it slowly to the gaze of his disciple. A small gold coin shone in the palm.